This is a Triple J podcast.
Every year, more people die from drug overdoses in Australia than in car crashes. And it's not getting any better. In 2024, Australia recorded its deadliest overdose year on record, an average of 7 deaths every single day. A lot of those are young people, some who've been trapped in addiction from childhood. So how do you get hooked so early on? And what's it like trying to break free and start rebuilding your life? I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Long Listen of the Week, a chat with Clay Scott on his story of overcoming addiction. Clay knows he is really lucky to be alive.
I should not be here. I didn't think that I was going to be here when I was 23.
What started as a bit of cheeky fun with mates in school quickly spiralled, and by the time Clay reached adulthood, he was in the full throes of drug addiction.
I really couldn't see a way out. I genuinely could not see the light at the end of the tunnel. In those moments, I just wanted to feel nothing.
Yeah, Clay's life has been chaotic to say the least. He basically can't remember a year since he was 18 that he didn't end up in a courtroom. But while many in that situation struggle to get out of the cycle of drug abuse, run-ins with the law, Clay's putting everything he can into turning his life around. And he knows there's a big road ahead, but he's determined. He's going to beat this for himself and for those following his journey on social media.
The scared, lonely, anxious kid that I was, knowing that I could become the man that I am today, I want other people to be able to achieve that.
This conversation is really something. It's equal parts traumatic and inspiring. And we touch on some heavy issues in here. We talk about mental health, self-harm, overdose. It's worth it. Here's my chat with Clay Scott. Clay, welcome to Hack.
Thank you so much, Dave.
How long have you been sober?
456 days now, so a little over a year and a few months.
Yeah, that's a while. How's it feel?
Incredible, man. It's a blessing. Like, recovery's a miracle. It truly is.
You've been through a lot, Clay.
Yeah.
In your life. Your battle with addiction started pretty early, as I said, like when you were a kid. Do you remember when you tried drugs for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. The first drug that I used and the first time I tried it was cannabis. And it was actually at school, like during lunchtime. Went to a secluded part of the school and a couple of the friends of my year that I had like a bong and we ended up smoking it at lunchtime.
And you were how old, Clay?
I was 12.
Okay.
So
was there a lot going on in your personal life at that point that you feel maybe was pushing you into using drugs? Like, were you in a pretty unhappy place?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always struggled with sort of anxiety, not feeling like I necessarily fit in. I never really excelled at anything like sports-wise and stuff. I was good, but never great. And I didn't really have like a really, really solid group of friends. And then the death of my nan as well, who I was extremely, extremely close with, not realizing it at the time how severely that affected me. When I lost her, that was my rock, my safe place. So after that, started searching for ways to escape, and that was drugs.
How close were you with her? Like, what was your relationship like?
Oh, incredible. Like, she, even the belief that I carry within myself now, I am capable. The belief that carries me forward to share my story was instilled by her at a very young age. I spent a lot of time with her growing up, and yeah, she was sort of the first person to really, truly like tell me how special I am and make me believe that. So when I lost her, it was pretty tough.
How did things progress after that? I mean, you're talking about some cannabis use at school, but can you tell us a bit more about what happened in the years following?
From the ages of like 12 to 14, it was pretty just like weekend usage with friends and go to the skate park, whatever, organize to stay at different people's houses and then fuck off to somebody else's house. Started going to, you know, like little house parties and things like that. And that's sort of when like other drugs came into the mix. Alcohol as well, ecstasy, MDMA, LSD as well was one that I started taking quite young, around the age of 15.
Who were you doing it with?
A lot of friends at school. Like, even though I didn't necessarily fit in anywhere, kind of shifted away from those mates. I stole some weed off my friend's dad. That obviously caused a bit of a rift between my like high school friends and stuff. A shitty thing to do. But at that time, I was already 2 to 3 years into smoking every day, and it kind of already had a hold of me at that point.
So you were using drugs every single day?
Yeah, from the ages of like 14, ice, Xanax, all of that stuff sort of after the age of 18. I was selling drugs when I left school. I got to about 17 and I left school. They asked me to leave because I was just not doing anything while I was there. So those substances sort of got introduced alongside my continuing declining mental health, relationship breakdown when I left school, really left me open to experimenting. So at the same time as pursuing money, I was also avoiding feeling what was going on inside my head.
Yeah, what was your mental health like?
Shocking. Absolutely terrible. I think my greatest fear was having to spend a day inside of my own head. I couldn't stand to live with myself. I knew that my nan watching over me wasn't proud of me. My family wasn't proud of my actions. I wasn't proud of my actions. And then I'd feel guilty about that. And then I'd feel shame. And then I'd use more drugs to get rid of the shame. And the cycle would just repeat itself.
What was your relationship like with the rest of your family at that point?
Pretty rough. So I got kicked out of home for the first time when I was 14. And then I ran away from home after that. But my parents did not know what to do. They absolutely did the best that they could. I was in and out of home. I'd disappear for weeks at a time and then just rock back up. Refused to listen to anybody that wouldn't validate my life choices.
Were you working at that point?
When I first left school, I was working on and off with my dad as a plasterer. Very quickly, like seeing how much money I was making sort of from the selling drugs side of things, made it incredibly hard for me to justify going to work at that point in time. By the time I was 18, 19, I was probably clearing somewhere between $800 and $1,000 a day. During COVID as well, everyone was just sort of at home getting money off the government and stuff. And yeah, that was when things sort of really like started to get serious because there was so much money to be made and that just fueled everything, some more drugs.
Was that the worst of it?
In terms of my actual using, yeah, that was definitely like the worst time. There wasn't a day where I didn't use drugs and alcohol, benzodiazepines and LSD and stuff like that. Yeah, just living in a constant state of suppression.
What you're describing, such a rough situation. Like it sounds like a really chaotic, intense time for you. Were you worried that you weren't going to survive?
I was just reflecting on it this morning. Like on paper, I should not be here. I didn't think that I was going to be here when I was 23. I didn't really expect that I was going to make it past, you know, the age of 21. And I kind of accepted the dangers of that lifestyle as just part of the game.
Were you seeing overdoses or did you overdose yourself?
I personally had tried to take my own life via overdose multiple times and for whatever reason didn't work. Very grateful for that. But outside of myself, I actually administered Narcan to somebody who overdosed in my like house where I was living at the time and like sort of brought her back. And then I also lost a good mate when I was a kid to a drug-induced heart attack as well.
I'm sorry to hear that. Must have been a really tough thing to deal with at such a young age.
Yeah. I really couldn't see a way out. I genuinely could not see the light at the end of the tunnel. In those moments, I just wanted to feel nothing.
In this situation, you're thinking there's no escape. Was there any attempt at any point to give up? Like, were you trying at all to maybe get off drugs for a period of time?
That didn't come until a little bit later on. Early 2024, my family had like a proper intervention after I told a friend that, you know, I wanted to take my own life. My parents had like ambulance, everything there. They wanted to send me to rehab. I said no. So I gave up everything that I was doing outside of weed. And for 7 months in 2024, I was just smoking weed, which was a step in the right direction. And I picked up martial arts. That was really good. And then the end of 2024, November, I had a seizure, which was to this day unexplained. when I had that seizure, I relapsed pretty quickly. And then within 4 months, I was locked up in jail.
Wow. I want to talk about like your relationship with police and the law and stuff like that. When was the first time you were arrested?
9 days after I turned 18.
And what happened there?
So I was waiting for a friend. It was completely by chance that the police arrested me, and they approached me being oblivious and an idiot at the time, never being in trouble. They asked if they could search me. I said, yeah, sure. They were going into my bag and they were like, is there anything you need to tell me about? I was like, no. Oh.
Forgot idiot. A few things.
Survival instincts or bloody hot chip. I told them like what was in my bag. I've always been under the impression like if you're already caught, you're caught. There's no point in making it worse for yourself.
So what did you have on you?
I had 39 capsules of MDMA.
Right. And so were you charged? What happened?
I got charged. So they took me back to the station, charged me with possess with intent to sell. And then I had to go to court. I ended up getting a good behavior bond or a community corrections order, as they're called now. I think that was 12 months.
You ended up being charged a second time.
I got arrested trying to evade a RBT because I was driving disqualified and on cocaine. And the police saw me try and turn off. They approached me, asked me if I had anything in the car. I said, like, yeah, there's a pound and a half of magic mushrooms and some weed and some stolen jewelry and stuff in the car. That got me on an intensive corrections order. And then last year, I was still on that ICO. I've gone to send a fucking package through the post to my mate in Queensland, and they've picked it up like that there's weed in there or whatever. And 3 weeks later, the police have come knocking on my door to execute a search warrant.
It's pretty like hectic stuff, Clay. Like you're sending drugs in the mail.
Yeah.
Was there a part of you that expected to be caught?
Honestly, like at that point in time, man, I was completely arrogant and unwilling to accept the fact that that was a reality because it would prevent me from actioning on my addiction, and that genuinely consumed my entire life. How can I get more money to buy more drugs to satisfy myself?
So when you were arrested the second time?
Third time.
What happened? Because you were at home, right?
Yeah, correct. Got a knock on the door, said, you know, are you Clay Scott? Got a search warrant to execute, came through the house, asked me where everything was. Told him there's some weed under my bed, there's some stuff in the fridge. They obviously handcuffed me. Unfortunately, at that time, my auntie was down on holiday, so she had to witness this whole thing. Made it so much worse. But nobody in my family's like experienced anything like this. Nobody in my family's been to jail. Nobody does hard drugs.
And how were you feeling, like knowing that your auntie was watching all this?
I felt disgusted at myself. And I think the worst part is not for the fact that I got caught, but for the fact that my auntie was there. That really was terrifying.
Were you on drugs at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. Codeine and morphine and stuff every day.
Do you end up in jail?
Yeah, so I spent 4 days at the police station in Newcastle waiting for my hearing at court, and then they sent me down to Silverwater in maximum security where I was on remand.
And have you ever experienced anything like that before?
No, first, like I'd been in the police stations obviously overnight and stuff before, but always got out on bail and yeah, so stepping into jail, and that was a whole new world for me.
What was it like?
Fucking terrifying. The best way I could describe it is like if you took all of the bad kids from like your local school district and put them in like a school camp and then amplified their egos by 1,000.
Yeah,
that's kind of what you get. It really showed me what my future would be if I kept being the person that I'd always been. And that was definitely the turning point for me.
So how long were you in Silverwater?
So I was initially sentenced to 2 years. Thankfully, I only ended up serving 3 months because I got onto a program called the Drug Court Program, which sends you to rehabilitation and then monitors you once you go back into the community. So very, very grateful for that.
And how's that program going? Because you're still on it now, right?
Yeah, it's amazing, honestly. Absolutely amazing.
Can you explain how it works for people who don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. So sent to either a rehab, some people get released straight back into the community, and then you've got to report to a court for 12 to 18 months, and it goes in three stages. So one is check-ins every week, then it goes to fortnightly, and then it goes to monthly. I got sent straight to a rehab first of all, which I'm incredibly grateful for. Shout out to Alex Milvanov. We actually went to the same rehab.
Oh, we spoke to Alex on Hack a little while ago, so you guys are mates.
Yeah, yeah. He's an awesome dude, a massive inspiration. But yeah, incredibly grateful that I ended up going to rehab first instead of back out of the community, because I did not have the tools in the toolkit to stay clean.
Yeah. So what was rehab like?
It was unreal, honestly. I personally had the most amazing experience. I really wanted the program to work. I think that really shaped my experience. Like, if you sort of go into it not really wanting to be there, you're probably not going to get as much out of it. But the rehabilitation center and the people there, like, owed my life to. It was a good safe space where I could sort of learn to sit with myself, rediscover who I was after spending such a long time in addiction, and really just like fostered a place where, you know, I could find myself again.
Was it hard coming off the drugs?
Yeah, so thankfully, by the time that I got to rehab, I'd already been incarcerated for 3 months. The first 3 weeks of being incarcerated were absolute hell. And my cellmate had sleep apnea, so that didn't help.
Oh, no. You had it from all angles. So what was it like?
Constant nightmares. Because I'd smoked weed for literally a decade, the like REM sleep debt that I was in was incredible. So the dreams that I was having were so incredibly vivid of getting stabbed in the face and getting held up at gunpoint and just reliving all of these moments. I was sweating constantly. I could barely sleep. Anxiety was through the roof. But what was different is I couldn't escape it.
You just had to live through it.
Yeah. Thank God that I did, because that was the very thing that I spent my entire life up until that point avoiding.
You just showed me a scar there on your face. What's that, Clay?
So got into a dispute over drug money and stuff. And yeah, I ended up getting stabbed in the face.
So someone just came up?
Yeah, yeah. So a car pulled up middle of the street in Newcastle. It was only about 9 o'clock at night too. It wasn't late. There was heaps of people around. And yeah, we had a bit of like, you know, an altercation, a conversation and stuff. And then as we were parting ways, he lunged out with a knife and got me square in the cheek.
It's a big scar. Like, you're so lucky.
I know. Any lower, you would have got me right in the carotid artery or my jugular.
You've had a few lucky escapes, Clay. Like, honestly, like, I know that you've had some bad luck as well, but there's also been a bit of good luck. You've had someone looking out for you, maybe.
Absolutely. No, I'm not necessarily religious, but I definitely owe that to, you know, my higher power, which is my nan.
Do you think your nan would be proud of where you are now?
Fuck. I really hope so.
Were you able to think of her during the addiction?
No, I really couldn't. I avoided that at all costs, because just thinking about her, knowing what she saw in me and what she would expect of me, and knowing that I was not even close to living up to anything that she would have ever wanted for me, was probably the scariest reality, and like why I still get choked up talking about her now. Because I did, like, just flat out avoided that for such a long time.
I can tell that, like, this is a really hard thing for you to talk about.
Yeah.
I reckon she would be super proud of you.
Thank you.
What you've achieved has been amazing, Clay.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't, and they end up not being able to recover. You've come out the other side. You're trying to share your experience to help other people. Why have you decided to go on social media and be so open about what you've been through and, you know, come on this radio show and talk about it to the whole country?
That's an excellent question.
Maybe you regret it, actually.
No. I'm firstly, like, thank you to you and Triple J and Jackson for having me on. Like, this is an incredible opportunity. Never once in my life did I ever, ever imagine that I would be sitting here in a Triple J studio. I'm beyond grateful. But I share my story and my recovery because it is genuinely a miracle that I'm still alive, or that I'm living a fulfilled and happy life. And the scared, lonely, anxious kid that I was, knowing that I could become the man that I am today through recovery, I want other people to be able to achieve that, because it has been nothing short than life-changing.
There will be someone listening now, Clay, who is struggling with addiction, and it could be anything. It could be same stuff that you were struggling with, could be something completely different, but they will also feel trapped and they will feel like that there's no escape. What's your advice in terms of taking that first step?
I think the first step for anybody, it's low friction. It's not a commitment like going to a rehab. Go on na.org.au and look up your local Narcotics or Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and get yourself to a meeting ASAP. I know it's terrifying. I know that it's going to be daunting. You don't have to speak. Nobody's going to make you speak, but just go there. See that you're not alone, because addiction is an isolating disease and the opposite of addiction is connection.
Clay, you're feeling really good about your life now and where you've landed. Is there any guilt that you feel about some of the stuff, like the selling drugs to other people? And do you think about some of those people you used to hang around with and where they are now?
Like, yes, that lifestyle does definitely carry a lot of guilt within me now, but rather than focusing on the past in a bad light, I use that pain, not only that I had for myself, but that I inflicted on others, to, you know, drive my purpose now, which is spreading good into the world and hopefully, you know, making a difference, changing the narrative around recovery. As far as other people, you know, that knew me back then, for the most part, I've received nothing but overwhelming support. Even some of my old customers and stuff, they follow me on Instagram and, you know, always show a lot of love. So I've had a lot of support from people.
Have you managed to get a good crew of like mates and stuff around you? Have you begun to repair some of those relationships with your family?
I'd say the relationships with my family has been the biggest thing that I've gotten back externally. Like the mates that I have now, like Dean coming down, all of my friends that I have around like me and the fitness community and stuff, I've never been supported like this in my entire life. I'm so incredibly grateful to have cultivated such a beautiful life that is worth protecting.
What are you doing now, Clay?
I still work part-time with my old man as a gyp rocker, and then I also work part-time at a supplement store, and on top of that, am starting my own online coaching business and hopefully helping people that are struggling the same way that I was.
You finished your sentence this month, right?
Yeah.
How's that going to feel, do you think?
Oh, it's going to be so nice to close that chapter of my life officially. I will still be on a good behavior bond for 8 months, but not having a check-in, not, you know, having to go to court once a month. I don't think there's been a year since I turned 18 that I haven't had to go to a courtroom. So it's going to be a massive just mental strain off my mind.
Are you worried or anxious about falling into addiction again, about doing drugs again?
It's definitely not on the bucket list, but to say that the desire or the possibility of it is completely void would be a lie. I don't think, you know, once you get sober, you just stop being an addict. As long as I continue to live my life through my values, I will never go back to drugs. But a part of that is also accepting the fact that the addictive personality and tendencies are over there doing push-ups in the corner waiting for me to slip up, so to speak.
How hard is it, like a guy in your 20s and you're living in Newcastle, which is a really like fun town and stuff. Is it challenging at times when there's so much temptation around you?
For me personally, no. But for the large majority of people, absolutely. You have to basically uproot your entire life, unless those people are going to genuinely respect your decision, which few people will, especially in the way our drinking and drugging culture is in Australia. Unfortunately, you will more than likely have to cut off a lot of friends, and that can be really hard.
Have you thought much about like young guys in particular and why they get drawn into this and what kind of the pressures are? And
look, I think for young men, a lot of what we want is just feel connected, feel like we belong somewhere, feel like we, you know, are accepted and people want us around. And I think drugs make it easy to do that because they sort of remove that, the inhibitions, scariness. Like we've all had conversations at 4 a.m. I love you, bro. I love you so much, you know, and you get that false sense of connection when you are taking substances and stuff. And it is like at some level, a bonding experience, I suppose.
Clay, what do you hope your life looks like in 10 years' time? Do you think much about the future?
Look, I've got big dreams. It'd be really nice to have a family and a loving partner at the very least. I just want to live a life that I am fulfilled with. I really hope that I can continue to, you know, affect and inspire people in positive ways. If you are in that dark place right now, I know how fucking bad it sucks. And I know how scary it is. It feels way worse than the familiar pain that you're experiencing. But please seek out help, support, tell somebody, because it will genuinely change your life the way that it's changed mine and so many other people.
Well, I'm sure you've helped a lot of people just in this chat, you know, opening the door to an experience that a lot of people have, but not a whole bunch of people do want to speak about because it can be really traumatic. It's really brave of you to come in and share all that. Clay Scott, it's been such a pleasure to get to know you. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
No, thank you, Dave.
What a life. And Clay knows he's got a long way to go, but he's committed. He's going to get there. He's such a nice guy, and I really wish him all the best. If you want to follow Clay's journey, he's on Instagram and TikTok at Clay Raymond. And if you want to see a piece of that chat, you can head to Hack Socials at Triple J Hack. You'll find us on Instagram and TikTok as well. And there's his story. There's a whole bunch of other stories that we've done recently as well. And if you like these big, long chats, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Leave us a review as well. Give us a rating. We've got interviews like that dropping every single week. That's all for now. I'll catch you next time.